meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. It's a Wednesday, so you're stuck with Father Tom Coy's Be Prepared for Brain Wrinkling Wednesday, or whenever you're listening to this episode, especially on podcast, as many of us listen to stuff and podcasts. Our lives are busy, and sometimes you're not always able to tune in to the shows you want to hear. Anyways, I got to start out, and I apologize if anybody from my own little parish might be listening. I got to repeat a historical episode that I shared in church, and I think is timely today. I'm gonna start with it, and then I'm gonna ask you to digest it, apply it the best you can to our lives today. But as often is the case, when you look through history, you can say, "Well, that's a very interesting story. That's a long time ago. Doesn't have much to do with me or anything else going on." Or else you could say, "Wow, the more things change, the more they stay the same. History repeats itself. Human nature doesn't change. Have to learn a lesson from the past, et cetera, right?" Okay, so what I want to take you back to is something called the suspension of the Jesuits, the Jesuit suppression. And it's a story particularly of two popes and a cardinal, okay? Two popes and a cardinal. First of all, maybe you knew or maybe you didn't know that the Jesuit Society was started by St. Ignatius, of course, of Loyola. And one of his strong charisms was to defend the papacy. It had become a tremendous missionary arm of the church, especially as the New World was being discovered and settled. We just had a wonderful little All Saints Day thing with our kids. They acted out different little snippets of stories of saint lives, and I got to play a part, even though I wasn't a kid, but I got to play Saint Isaac Jogues, one of the great Jesuits who was killed in what is now New York by the Mohawk Indians. Probably you know some of that story. The Indians captured him. They would accuse some of those missionary priests and brothers, lay people, of superstitious actions that they would blame when a disease came into the world, or they had bad luck, or even a terrible storm, etc. They would blame the missionaries. So they did that to St. Isaac Jogues, and they first cut off his fingers. There's a little debate whether it was cut off by sharp sea shells. It's hard to say. Or they chewed him off. And he goes back to Europe. they say, well, you can't go back and you can't say Mass anymore. He had to appeal to the Pope to get a dispensation to say Mass without the two fingers that you hold the host with. Anyways, he did, and he begs to go back, and he knows most likely martyrdom would await him, which it did. They killed him. Anyways, okay, so we got this new order of missionaries and intellectuals, the Jesuits, and they were doing a lot of baptizing and converting people over here. And they get suppressed. The Pope pulls the plug. You can call him canceled, shall we say. They were upset. Why? And so getting into this part of the story, it's very, very interesting. Okay? And it has to do with two popes and a cardinal. There's a whole lot of figures, but we're going to concentrate on two popes, Clement the 13th and Pope Clement the 14th. And the cardinal that we're going to concentrate on is a French cardinal by the name of Christopher Beaumont. Beaumont. That's a common name. Actually, there was a famous American explorer who went out to the West. Anyways, with a similar name, Beaumont. Anyways, okay. So the rich folks and the royalty, the noblemen and the merchants, we'll put those in the two baskets. Oftentimes they were partners in a lot of things, of course. The rich and famous business people and the rich and famous political people. So obviously in a time when monarchies ruled Europe and most of the world, so it was the noblemen and the merchants. People were giving money to the Jesuits in the hope of getting a good return on their investment. They were thinking, like many financial planners do today, of putting money in an emerging market. I'm sure many of you who deal with money things know what an emerging market is. Like today, you see a company starting in China or Taiwan or Malaysia or wherever. You see it has great potential to make a good profit. You buy stock in that company, and there you go. You get a good return on your profit. Anyways, that's what was going on. This is we're gonna focus on the 1700s. Isaac Jogues was about 100 years before that. He was one of the first. So it took a while for this anxiety or problem to arise. So the fact that these people were giving money and hoping for an investment and it wasn't coming, they started petitioning the noblemen, the kings and dukes and all that, to petition the popes. If you have trouble with a certain religious group or person, you appeal to the Pope, right? And the Pope is supposed to have universal jurisdiction, and therefore, he was appealed to. They say you gotta do something with these Jesuits. Okay, not only was this financial aspect getting under people's skin, especially the noblemen and the rich merchants. A lot of the noblemen and rich merchants had Jesuits as their spiritual directors, especially as confessors. And so these strong believing Jesuit priests would often tell even a king or a queen to not play around. And that was not something you said to a king or a queen. I'm the king or queen. I'll very well do whatever I want. I'm the king. I can do it. And the Jesuit would say, nope, you're a Catholic, and therefore you should have only one wife. There's a famous story about the Jesuit confessor of King Louis the, which number was he? I think he was the 14th. Let's see. No, I think the 15th. Anyways, he had a mistress, and the Jesuit told him, you got to stop that. And he also was talking to the mistress, and he said, you got to stop that. She wisely stopped sleeping with the king, but became his, how shall we say, his pimp. So he would supply the king with other girls. So anyways, we have these two forces going against the nobles and the rich merchants. These Jesuits were just becoming a pain in the neck. And therefore, they petitioned the Pope. So in comes Pope at this time. Let me see. I got to look at my notes because this is, there's several popes here. One, two, three, four, five. Okay, there's five popes spanning the time from 1740. Okay, roughly a little time before the American Revolution over here. Up until 1823. So we're talking about 60, 75 years. Pope Benedict the 14th, he was a kind of man about the world. He loved the Enlightenment, and so he expressed desire to follow some of the new philosophers who were these rationalists, as it were. And so he didn't exactly take on the Jesuit question, but he certainly paved the way. He wasn't what we would consider a good, holy, wise pastor of the church. He was more interested in buying beautiful paintings for his hall, or probably buying a new invention one way or another. Okay, after Benedict the 14th, then comes Pope Clement the 13th. So he's from 1758 to 1769. So right before our revolution in the United States, of course. He dies as a confessor. Now, that doesn't mean he was just a good person hearing confessions in a confessional. Confessor is a special designation we give to saints who died because of their faith, confessing their faith, but weren't necessarily martyred. Their heads weren't chopped off. They weren't burned at the stake. They weren't shot through with arrows, etc. They were often tortured, left in jail, fed poorly, just abandoned. And of course, many of us would just die because of that. So that's Pope Clement the 13th became, he was tortured because he didn't want to act against the Jesuits at that time. He saw that the Jesuits were doing some very good things. Let me see if I can find a quote from Clement the 13th. I think I have one here. Yeah. He said this, and again, I take a lot of my historical facts from Warren Carroll's History of Christendom, one of the greatest history series I think you can grab. So he says, Pope Clement XIII's reaction to Spain's 1767, so this is a couple years before he dies, Spain suppressed the Jesuits in Spain. Let's get those Jesuits out of Spain, because obviously Spain was interested in a good return on their investment as they were sending money over, and they heard there was lots of wealth and riches, right? Gold and silver. And so anyways, the king of Spain does does what the rich nobleman and the rich merchants wanted him to do. Clement XIII says, of all the blows that have wounded us during the 9 sorrowful years of our pontificate, the most painful to our paternal heart is the one which your majesty has announced to us. The majesty is the King of Spain. So let's see, that would have been, not that you really care about that, but I'm interested. I think it's Charles III in Spain, who was a grandson of Louis XIV from France. So this is the time when France wanted, really, there was a few, there were a number of years when France actually took over Spain. It's a small little segment there. And so the King of France put a Frenchman as the King of Spain. Well, you can see that probably didn't go over too well with the Spaniards, just on a very natural level. Okay, so King Charles III, the Frenchman who's the King of Spain, he kicks the Jesuits out of Spain. Pope Clement XIII continues, we attest before God and men that that body, the institution, the spirit of the Society of Jesus, are innocent. Nay, not that this society is not only innocent, but pious and useful and holy in its object, its laws, and its teachings. Okay, so we got a pope who's trying to defend this group that is becoming controversial because they're not turning a profit and they're just interested in baptizing and converting pagan Indians into Catholicism, and our rich merchants didn't have any use for that. They just wanted a good return on their investment. Okay, so then comes Pope Clement XIV. He rules from 1769 to 1774. Okay, and so 1773 is the key year. 1773, so 3 years before 1776, 3 years before John Adams and George Washington. Oh, no, George, what? I don't think he signed the Declaration of Independence. Was George Washington there? Yeah, sure he was. Thomas Jefferson. Okay, all those guys. We know what 1776 means for us Americans. Anyways, 3 years before that, this Pope Clement XIV signs a letter suppressing the Jesuits. The Jesuits are no more. You have no more authority to be a society. I'm going to pull the plug on you. And so all the Jesuits are, well, what the heck are we going to do? As a matter of fact, one of the Jesuits who was suppressed was a guy by the name of Carroll, John Carroll. He becomes the first bishop in Baltimore. We may know that part. His cousin was a great landowner in Maryland. And so we know he plays a part in the story of American Foundation. Anyways, so he was an ex-Jesuit, actually. So he never returned to the Jesuits, even after the Jesuits were brought back. So 1773 is a key word. Now, Voltaire was this crazy philosopher gaining lots of popularity, a rationalist who was called all religion superstition. And it was in 1773 that Voltaire, as he was trying to fan the flames of the French Revolution, was saying, give us 20 years and the Catholic Church will be no more.
Wow.
That was...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's very brain wrinkling. So you could see how Voltaire, he prophesied, because it was 20 years almost to the day when the Reign of Terror started with the French Revolution. Okay, so so we have these two Clements, two Pope Clements, 13th and 14th, same name, but couldn't have been different. The Pope Clement the 13th is tortured and dies in prison because he was defending the Jesuits. Pope Clement the 14th comes along, and he was put in office by the Bourbon family. You know, if you know some things about European history, you'll always hear about the Bourbon family and the Habsburgs. And so the Bourbons were more of a French clan, and the Habsburgs were more of the, I will just say, German slash Spanish. They were in both those countries, as it were. So we have this strange situation. Oh, boy. And I think we have a situation here on our Winds of Change. We are going to take our first break, and I got to bring in Cardinal Beaumont into the story. We have to pray about such things and learn our lessons well, of course, right? Okay. I'm Father Tom Coyes on the Winds of Change on AM 750.
Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. For Winds of Change podcasts, click on Listen to Episodes.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer-board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyes. I'm in the 1700s, late 1700s, back in Europe, right when all of us Americans were trying to start a country. There's something called the Jesuit suppression, and it's a very amazing story. And I'm contrasting two popes that were very much at the heart of it. Pope Clement XIII, who didn't want the Jesuits suppressed at all, Pope Clement XIV, who was put in power by the powerful Bourbon family, mostly French, and this Voltaire was gaining prominence. As a matter of fact, there's another eerie prediction that Voltaire states. He encourages, you'd call, we won't put Voltaire in the category of the political class. He wasn't a king or a duke or anything like that. We won't put him in the category of a rich merchant. He's in the category, we'll call, of the intellectuals, the professors, the high thinkers of the day, the professors of the day. And these folks, there are others like Voltaire, they were trying to get the civil authorities, the kings, the noblemen, to do away with the church. And they had an in because the noblemen didn't like the church a lot of times, especially these pesky Jesuits who were telling him not to sleep around and to worship God in the true church. The Protestant Reformation, so-called Reformation, was alive and well, as the Huguenots were alive and well in France, and all that jazz. You can call them the political ruling class of the day. They already didn't like the religious gang, those religious fanatics, telling us to have only one wife. You know, amazing if they hadn't discovered gay marriage yet, they might have been, the Jesuits would have most likely have been telling them, if you're going to get married, you've got to get married to a person of the opposite gender, right? Anyways, that puts this whole story in context a little bit, doesn't it? Okay, but Voltaire said, you've got to sharpen your knives to slay the church. And it was by the same knives that you sharpened to slay the church that we, the intellectuals, will use on slaying the monarchs, which is exactly what happened. The noblemen cut off your nose despite your face, as it were, as the intellectuals were enticing them to attack the religious. They thought, hey, this is going to be great. We'll be all left alone to rule. But of course, that wasn't the case either. They were next, as it were. It's a strange eeriness in some ways. I'm sorry to say, but this conflict between Israel and Hamas going on now, I'm hearing it a number of times, you know, even though you're not Jewish, you're next. And of course, I can't help but accept that kind of prediction, because I know many of the radical Muslims do think of Israel as Satan, but they think of America and much of the West as the great Satan. The United States is the great Satan, all right? So we have to be careful to realize that history can repeat itself like that. Here's a going back into time a little bit, back to, let's see, Pope Benedict the 14th. He was before Clement the 13th. The Cardinal of Lisbon, Portugal, expels the Jesuits. His deathbed dirge goes like this. During the last centuries, the Pope's prestige has been damaged by the French. The propagation of their tenets in Germany, in parts of Spain, and even in Italy had done much to harm the papacy. In consequence, the popes had not been able to come to the aid of the oppressed as in the past. There were few countries now which did not offer insults to the Pope. As for France, the Parliament was showing the utmost contempt for papal authority. No one from there had asked his advice in the present situation. He refrained from intervening for fear of doing great harm, although this attitude reminded him of Nero, lyre in hand, looking down from his window on the burning city of Rome. That's the king of Portugal, who was not innocent in flaming the fires of the anti-Jesuit spirit going on. As a matter of fact, he had a mistress, and he also had a Jesuit confessor, and so you could put the pieces of the puzzle together there. Anyways, he had a sort of a secretary of state, this king of Portugal, by the name of Pombal, who hated the Jesuits, and he plotted and had that Jesuit confessor of the king arrested and executed. So he should be a martyr, I guess you could say, right? Anyways, so jumping ahead now, we got Pope Clement the 14th, and he's being mightily influenced by the rich merchants and the noblemen of France, Spain, Portugal, even of England, even though England by this time in this late 1700s was pretty solidly Protestant, and it's Church of England. They were still persecuting Catholics for sure. Even all those martyrs in England that were hung, drawn, and quartered because they were professing Catholics, especially priests and catechists, right? And religious of sorts. So, as a matter of fact, that was one of the threats of one of the kings. It was either Spain or Portugal. I think it was the king of Spain. Going back to Charles III, he says to the Pope, in order to get Pope Clement XIV to issue his suppression, he says, you better get rid of those Jesuits, or we're going to do what they did in England, and that is to start our own national church. Of course, that's not something that the church wants, but it was enough to influence Pope Clement XIV. As a matter of fact, notice that, my friends. Be aware of the concept of a national church. It's a very, very key theme when you read history. How tyrants and despots, and even benevolent tyrants, not so tyrannical tyrants, they don't mind religion as long as they can control religion. In other words, a king will welcome a religion as long as he gets to control who the leaders of the religion are. That's exactly what a national church produces, a church that is under the control of the political rulers. That's what happened in England with King Henry VIII. That's what is happening. That's my friends. That's part and parcel why the church in China today is somewhat in the news. If you watch Catholic news, Cardinal Zen was worried that the Vatican in just recent years was going to accept the proposal of a national Chinese Catholic Church. And Cardinal Zen was saying, we can't do that. We can't let, especially atheists, pick who they want the bishops to be. And unfortunately, that's kind of the situation that I think is growing. Not sure what the status is exactly right now, but keep your eyes on that, my friends, for sure. So, okay, now let's... I'm sorry, it's at the bottom of the hour already. Let's take our second break, okay? And we will get to Cardinal Beaumont, I promise you, as soon as we come back, okay? I'm Father Tom Coyes on Winds of Change on AM 750.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stan's Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back to the Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyce. Enter our story, a good cardinal from France, Paris, France, by the name of Christopher Beaumont. Remember his name because he sees what's going on. He sees that Pope Clement XIV is being unduly influenced by the bad characters, the rich and famous. They're still there. He sees that these two major reasons why the noblemen and the rich merchants are against the Jesuits is because they were telling them to stop sinning and they weren't getting return on their investment money. So Cardinal Beaumont, he writes to the Pope and tries to convince him not to do what he's thinking of doing. Unfortunately, he doesn't succeed. And as I said, in 1773, Pope Clement XIV issues the letter suppressing the Jesuits. Okay. There's an interesting point that was going on in France a little bit before then, that the noblemen were trying to tell the Pope that everybody in France is against these Jesuits. But here's a little fact of history. Facts are annoying at times, aren't they? The French Parliament, the secular rulers, they respond to King Louis XIV, who is kind of a timid French Catholic king, of course, in Paris there. And King Louis XIV does issue a sort of like a mild defense of the Jesuits. You know, well, they're not that bad, you know, not a big problem here. What opera is playing at the opera house this weekend? Anyways, the French Parliament gets mad at King Louis XIV, and they tell the Pope, no, everybody's against these Jesuits. You got to suppress them. A little interesting fact, at the bishops' meeting in 1761, the French bishops had a synod, a conference. They took a vote on whether they should support the suppression of the Jesuits or defend the Jesuits. It was a vote of 51-1. Only one bishop. Do you know what side it went on? It's 51 of the bishops were defending the Jesuits. Only one thought suppression was the way to go. So the parliamentary folks that were writing and visiting the Pope, telling him that everybody, a lot of the clergy don't like these guys. So they were lying. They were lying. Not that Pope Clement XIV needed persuasion. He was getting enough pressure from his family and the rich merchants and all the rest. So, but that's a little annoying fact of history that vote was taken. So, let's see, going down here, interesting. Another little point that Warren Carroll makes in his history. When the Jesuits were rounded up over back here in the New World, mostly down in Mexico and South America, there were still some here in the United States, but because France was sort of kicked out of the United States, with the British winning the Revolutionary War, etc. The French didn't have too many French Jesuits in the colonies. There might have been a few, but I don't know. As a matter of fact, it is said that George Washington, on his deathbed, had a confession and even a deathbed conversion to Catholicism by either a Jesuit or an ex-Jesuit priest. That's I'd love to find some proof of that somewhere. That seems to be a feasible story of history. But here's what Warren Carroll says: all the Jesuits in the New World rounded up and shipped back to Europe. Many died on the way, being treated so poorly. He says that 400,000 Indians could have revolted if the Jesuits told them to fight back, but the order never came. If you ever saw that movie, The Mission, you get some of that. It gets that puts in that this part of history in the context. They had great loyalty to a lot of the Indians that were baptized, that were converted. And they could have said, let us revolt. But the Jesuits took the humble road and didn't tell the Indians to fight back like that. Another interesting quote from Britain, from England. And again, we're not so well disposed to defend Catholic stuff. They said this when they heard about all that Jesuit suppression: every supporter of the natural and social law must be outraged by so tyrannical a procedure. If a prince of state can dispose of any particular body of persons just as he pleases, without giving any other reason but his own will, with causes known only to himself, what is left of the scrutiny of law? Boy, that's a great line. Too bad Henry VIII didn't hear that 200 years before. So, okay, now getting back here to Pope Clement issues his letter, and he sends it to all the bishops around the world, especially Europe, of course. The czar in Russia gets the letter of suppression, and he doesn't like it, and so he doesn't propagate it to his bishops around. He says, "Well, just deep sixes it." Is that what would you say? File it in the round file, as we might say. That's what the Tsar of Russia did with Pope Clement's suppression letter. Cardinal Beaumont in France gets it, and this is what he takes pen to paper and shoots back to Clement XIV. This brief is nothing but a personal and a private judgment, among other things that are remarked in it by our clergy, is the extraordinary, odious, immoderate characterization of the encyclical Pacendi Munus of the saintly Clement XIII, whose memory will be forever glorious, and who had invested his encyclical, which is being maligned by Clement XIV, with all the due and proper formalities of such a document. That's because Cardinal Beaumont was saying that Pope Clement XIV didn't do such due diligence, didn't propagate it as he should have. It just was fired off, shall we say. So Cardinal Beaumont continues, "Holy Father, it is impossible for me to ask the clergy to accept the brief. I would dishonor my office if I did so. It would be to inflict a serious injury on religion as well as to cast an aspersion on the learning and integrity of the prelates who laid before the king their approval of the very points that are now condemned in this brief." Like I said, the prelates, the bishops of France, wanted the Pope to know we shouldn't be suppressing them. Now they're getting a letter from the Pope saying we should suppress them. In a word, What this brief designates as peace is not peace. Now, that's a reference to the wording of Pope Clement XIV's wording, because he doesn't explain the crimes of the Jesuits. He doesn't say, because they've done this, because they have done that, especially disobedience to this order or that order, because they are stealing, cheating, being immoral in any way, shape, or form. All he says is, for the good of the church, I must suppress the Jesuits. For the peace, he uses the word peace. For the peace of the church, I must suppress the Jesuits. So Cardinal Beaumont is saying, this peace is not peace. Here, listen to this line. It is precisely that peace against which the Jesuits in the four quarters of the world have declared an active and vigorous and bloody warfare, which they have carried to the limit and in which they have received the greatest success. In other words, the Jesuits were trying to plant peace in the New World, especially by the truth of Christ. And you are not going to get true peace with false religions ruling the day, shall we say. There were plenty of religions among the Indians, right? And the Jesuits saw that true and lasting peace wouldn't be achieved by, shall we say, watering down the faith and accepting a kind of, a place in the, if Catholicism accepted a place in the world of religions such that we will not make any claims of truth that go beyond what our constituents say and believe. In other words, we will teach our Catholics to believe there is only one God, but three persons in that one God. But we will not say that that truth is true for anyone else. If you are a non-Catholic, you can believe there are no gods or that there are 12 gods or whatever. You see, so this really is a significant example that hits our day and age, because you could see how that attitude, it leads obviously to a theo-relativism, the relativistic truth of God, as well as a moral relativism. The relativism of doctrine about God is interwoven with the relativism of moral principles. Now, that's what we're facing today a lot. And there's levels of moral differences. You try to get someone from an immoral lifestyle to a moral lifestyle in stages. You could say, you shall not lie. And then you move along to this is the beauty of Pope John Paul II's theology of the body. He bases so much of his teaching and defense of Catholic moral theology on human sexuality, on the fact that the marital act is a sign language. It's speaking something with your body. And obviously, lots of different messages can be spoken with those acts of the body. So he connects the idea of sexual morality with the idea of truth-telling. So you can start with telling people we got to tell the truth, but then you can end with saying Catholic Church was right all along about moral aspects of human sexuality. Unfortunately, that's not something very well accepted. Okay, one more break here, okay, my friends. I'm going to try to wrap this up. There's so much interesting connections we can make to our own day. But let's take our final break. I am Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
I'm Father Tom Coys, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now, you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststanschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. For Winds of Change podcasts, click on Listen to Episodes. Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
I'm Father Tom Coys, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
In the 1800s, Lincoln lost 8 elections before he was elected President of the United States. In 1963, Phil Knight started a shoe company. Everyone told him he would fail. By 2016, he had turned Nike into a $91 billion company. In 1985, Shaquille O'Neal was cut from his high school basketball team. He was too slow and clumsy. Coach Brown from LSU met him and told him to believe in himself, work hard, and that someday he can come play for him. He did. And then he went on to become one of the best basketball players in history. What if all those people listened to the voices that told them they were never going to accomplish their dreams? Friend, if God planted a dream in your heart, don't listen to the people who tell you you're too young, too old, too short, too tall. Go for it, and then leave the results to Him. God's dream for you has less to do with what you accomplish and more to do with who you become along the way. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
Why does he have to watch every single bowl game this week? Right, ladies? This is Father Thomas J. Loy with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. Men love football for the same reason they love to make love, become a father, seek adventure, experience mystery, and see beauty. For men, football is an experience of the spells of mystery through a sport. Mystically speaking, the point of football is to plant the seed in the end zone. The coveted end zone can only be approached with the greatest attentiveness and finesse. A pass reception becomes the conception of 6 new points, and the team celebrates their fruitfulness. So remember, ladies, football for him is an experience of the very dynamics contained in the spousal mystery. And gentlemen, don't forget where your real experience of the spousal mystery is found. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Adam is construed as a priest. Adam, before the fall, is in the stance of right relationship to God. And so he's seen as a priest in the Garden of Eden as a kind of primordial temple, right? A place of right praise. What happens in sin is we lose that priestly role. We stop being priests. We start worshiping ourselves and worshiping creaturely things. So Jesus now is seen as the new Adam. He's the fulfillment of law and Torah and temple and sacrifice, hence he's the high priest. And so we see the cross as a place not just of Roman execution, but it's a place where the supreme sacrifice has been performed. And so the priesthood, in that sacrificial sense, continues in the mystical body of Christ. So to the present day, when I, as a priest, celebrate the sacrifice of the Mass, I'm standing in that great tradition, participating in the high priesthood of Jesus.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred.